What's up? What's going on, everybody? My name is Greg Hall, and welcome to the Bar Talk Sports Podcast here on all your podcast services, iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podomatic, wherever you're listening to this. Welcome to the show. Again, my name is Greg Hall. I'll be your host here. This is the debut episode of the Bar Talk Sports Podcast. We are a weekly podcast running down everything from the NFL, NHL, MLB, NBA. This podcast is a weekly podcast. This is the week of Wednesday, December 3rd. I'm going to assume you're hearing it the night of Wednesday, December 3rd or after. So basically, a little bit about this podcast is it's sports. I mean, it's professional sports. So it's kind of the topics are kind of sensitive. Things become old news very quick. So I'm going to try and stay away from like scores and highlights, things of that nature that kind of get old day to day. Sports happen every single day. So my thing here is to bring it to a little bit of a different perspective, power rankings, news, rumors, things of that nature, and get down to the nitty-gritty. It's a conversational podcast. My original plan was to have it to be uncensored and have, you know, like I obviously like Bar Talk Sports, completely uncensored with anything I wanted to say. And I've kind of scaled that back down a little bit. I've decided to, throw something in there, make it a little bit exciting. But, you know, I'm going to keep it family friendly for the most part. I can't promise anything when I have guests on. Yes, this will be a solo podcast. But I will have guests on from time to time. Before we get started, though, just to give you a little bit of how to find us, if you want, as we're doing more episodes, I want to have segments of the show where I answer questions, things of that nature, from the viewers. If you want to email the show with any questions at all for anything sports-related, heck, it can be anything life-related, I don't care. I will answer it for you here on the show. It's bartalksportscast@gmail.com. Again, bartalksportscast@gmail.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at BT Sports Podcast, or you can go ahead to facebook.com/BarTalk Sports Podcast. Again, we're here to talk about everything. We're going to start tonight with the NFL, but again, before we get into that, I do want to kind of give you a little bit of background and how this show came to be. I record this show from Philadelphia, well, a suburb of Philadelphia. I'm going to try not to have any bias when talking about, you know, well, everything. This is not just a Philadelphia show. I used to do a Philadelphia show for 3 years. That was called The War Room. Honestly, I wouldn't be here without that show. Those guys are huge. They deserve big props. If you are a fan of sports in general, not just Philadelphia sports, they do center on Philadelphia sports, but man, they know their stuff. So please, go ahead and like them on Facebook. It's facebook.com/warroomphilly. Just type in the War Room into your search bar, much like you can just type in Bar Talk Sports Podcast into your search bar to find this show, or at War Room Philly on Twitter and Instagram. Again, those guys, it's Anthony and Keith, two friends of mine. I did the show with Anthony for 3 years where we would live stream every single week and do more of a conversation with our fans. People would watch live. They would ask us questions, and we would answer them right there on the air. This radio on demand thing's a little different. You have to write the questions in. I have to select them and read them and answer them, and it's not really a conversation in that aspect. But what I want you to do is call me out. If I say something incorrect, if I bring something up that you want to talk about further, write to me in an email, tweet at me, write it on the Facebook wall. I will read it on the next week's show, and we'll address everything. I'm the type of person who tries not to leave anything out. So if you write something, I will 99.9% read it. But again, I would not be here without The War Room. They're a fantastic show based in Philadelphia, based on Philadelphia. Go ahead and follow them, like them, subscribe to them, watch them. I believe they're in the midst of still doing the live stream. Maybe they'll get into a podcast later on. At this current moment, they don't have one. I'm very excited to see what that show has for the future, but my time there was unbelievable. I couldn't necessarily do what I wanted to do with that show to the best of my abilities, so I kind of stepped away from it, like 3-4 months ago, maybe 5-6 months ago at this point. It is December. By the way, 2014's flying by. That's insane. But I decided that I was kind of getting the itch, getting the urge, and I jumped back into it, decided to do my own show. Again, I will have guests on here as I see fit, but enough about me, enough about that. It's been almost 5 minutes. Let's get down into it. We're going to start in the NFL, the National Football League. I have a couple different things. We're going to go through some topics. Well, really just two topics, the power rankings, my top five and bottom five power rankings, and then my game of the week. That's pretty much going to cover it for the NFL talk. We'll start with the news almost. It's Ray Rice being reinstated and hoping to find another team. I am going to stay away from anything that guy did in terms of off the field. Okay, I'm not going to get into moral standpoints and where I feel or if I feel this guy deserves to be even in the league. The fact of the matter is he's being reinstated and he's looking for work. Should he find that work? If you watched Ray Rice over the past two seasons, you saw a decline rapidly. You saw this guy's numbers plummet, and that's something that you have to keep in mind. This was all before all that stuff went down. So when you take into that account, this guy was one of the best running backs in football. Then all of a sudden, he can't average 3 yards a carry. This guy was struggling, and I think that's an understatement. And for a Ravens team that was really kind of in flux, then all of a sudden they go to the Super Bowl, they win the Super Bowl, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, this team's played a lot of football, what's going to go down? And then again, Ray Rice kind of collapsed. Everything happened off the field. Won't really get into that. If you don't know what happened, then you're lost in the woods, and I don't know why you would even be listening to this show. But Ray Rice back in the NFL hoping to find a team. There are teams out there that have running needs. I mean, look at Indianapolis. Trent Richardson is bad at football. What is that? That Heron kid or Heron? He's had two fumbles in two straight weeks. Now, he's averaging 7 yards a carry while doing that, right? But will a guy like Ray Rice help that team? That's a team with playoff aspirations, as we'll get to in a little bit. Ray Rice isn't much better than Trent Richardson at this point, and Trent Richardson is almost useless. They're splitting carries in Indianapolis, so you have to figure to yourself, would he come in and be the dominant back? Would he be a part of a timeshare? If Ray Rice finds work, and I don't think he will this season, I think he'll play next season. I do not think he will find an NFL team, and if he does sign with an NFL team this year, I just don't think he'll find too much work or too much success if he does find work. This is more of a guy who, in my opinion, at this point of his career, is a timeshare back. If you want to bring him into a situation where he'd be the guy, I think he would fail. I think there wouldn't be anything for him in terms of success. Bring him into a timeshare, maybe he does something. A team like Indianapolis could benefit from him, but realistically, he could find his way to a bottom feeder team just to kind of reinstate himself for next season. I can see that absolutely playing out and absolutely being, the situation. Really, though, do you want to see Ray Rice in football again? Take away what he did, or at least try to, I guess. Take away what he did off the field. It's not your business. It's not my business. He's apologized. He didn't apologize at first, but he's apologized. He's moved past it, or he's trying to. Should he find work? I say, yeah, he should, but will he? Probably not this season. Maybe in the offseason, he re-signs with another team, gets himself established through training camp, maybe just like a tryout basis, comes into training camp, impresses, and then gets the work. I don't think he's ever going to be the Ray Rice of old. I don't think you're ever going to see him as the feature back in any systems. I don't think that Ray Rice's better days are ahead of him. If you move into the game of the week this week, I'm going to go ahead and I have to be a little biased. Generally, I wouldn't do that. I kind of wrote two different games down just because, again, I said I'm from Philly. So I don't want to sound like, oh my gosh, my first episode, it's Philadelphia, Philadelphia, Philadelphia. So I'll say that if I was not from Philadelphia, my game of the week would still be Seattle, Philadelphia. This is for the week of December 3rd. You're probably hearing this when the Bears and Cowboys are playing on Thursday night or after. The Seattle Seahawks and Philadelphia Eagles game in Philadelphia on Sunday, 4:25. It's a national audience game. How can that not be the game of the week? It's two powerhouses, two teams that are, well, Philadelphia's 9-3, Seattle's 8-4, on the rise, won 6 out of 7. Philadelphia in first place in the NFC East. This is a team in Seattle that will probably be in first place when all is said and done. They will probably pass the Cardinals, who, again, you know how I told you earlier, I have or written down. The Chiefs at the Cardinals would be my other game of the week. That's two teams battling for their divisions, respectively, the AFC and NFC West. So that could be, again, a candidate for game of the week. I'm going to stick with Seattle, Philadelphia. You have a coach in Chip Kelly who runs a proficient offense against a defense who is still in the top echelon of the NFL in defensive, in almost all defensive categories. And you have, obviously, the Earl Thomases, the Richard Shermans of the world. if I am Chip Kelly, I take Riley Cooper, stuff him on the left side where Sherman only plays. He does not switch sides, and say, here you go. Cover Riley. I have Jordan Matthews. I have Jeremy Maclin. I have Darren Sproles out of the backfield. LeSean McCoy has found his footing with this offensive line getting healthy. And the other side of the ball, you have Seattle with obviously the beast, Marshawn Lynch. You have Russell Wilson coming into his own, Doug Baldwin. These guys are coming into their own as well. Now, they've only scored, what, two touchdowns in the last 2 weeks combined, I believe it is. I think they won their last two games by a score of 19-3 each time against San Francisco and Arizona. So this is a team whose defense has stepped up in a big way. So the key to this matchup, Chip Kelly's offense versus the Seattle defense, it's in front of a national stage in Philadelphia. If this game was in Seattle, I'd be petrified. As an Eagles fan, I'm still petrified. I do have Seattle actually winning this game. Probably Seattle's probably still going to score in the 20s. This Eagles defense played fantastic against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving. They won 33-10, but Seattle also played on Thanksgiving. Seattle is also a very rested team. They won on Thanksgiving against San Francisco. They're going to be coming. Now, they're traveling cross-country. I get it. They're coming into a stadium where the last couple times they were here, they won, and including a Monday night showdown where they won, what, 42-0 on the night that the Eagles retired Reggie White's number. I don't see Seattle losing this game. It's going to be a tight one. It might be like 21-17, 24-20, something along those lines. It'll be tight. I do think Seattle pulls it out. That's the game of the week for sure, in my opinion. Let's move on to the power rankings for for this week. Just the top five and the bottom five. I don't think I should sit here and go through all 32 teams. That would be rather boring. So let's just go top five. Number one, we'll start at the top, the 9-3 Green Bay Packers. Every team in my top five is 9-3. Every team in my bottom five is 2-10, each with one exception. I have an 8-4 team and a 1-11 team. So anyway, the Green Bay Packers being 9-3, how are you going to stop them? They just beat New England at home. New England was coming in hot. So hot, and Green Bay pretty much put that fire right out. Aaron Rodgers is playing on another level. Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Eddie Lacy, I'm sorry for the background noise, please pardon that. But you have the team is just playing so well. How can you not say this is the best team in football? Coming in at number two would be the New England Patriots, the same team that just lost to Green Bay. They would probably be number one in most power rankings, if not all. If they had won that game, Tom Brady's still playing at a high level. This team is still scary. Bill Belichick, still, in my opinion, the best coach in football. They drew a tough assignment. Who's going to go into Lambeau and win? Nobody, especially nowadays, nobody. Coming in at number three, Denver. You can never count them out. New England's ahead of them. I think it's more of like a tiebreaker situation, New England beating Denver. Peyton Manning is still Peyton Manning. They are just out of this world when it comes to talent on the field. I don't know if a team has better talent, overall talent, that they put on the field week in and week out. Their running situation is still a little messed up in terms of injuries, but C.J. Anderson has been more than what you could have expected, tenfold. This guy's been unbelievable since Monte Ball and Ronnie Hillman got hurt. Big props to what they're doing out there in Denver, and I think they can probably repeat as AFC champions if it weren't for the New England Patriots. Number four, my Philadelphia Eagles, 9-3, showing on Thanksgiving why they're the best team in the NFC East, in a very weak NFC East with the Giants and Redskins. However, still the best team in that division. Chip Kelly has this team playing well. Yeah, they haven't really beaten anybody with a winning record besides Dallas. I mean, they got trampled by Green Bay. They got beaten by Arizona. They got beaten by San Francisco. This is a team that has a huge task in front of them in Seattle. Yeah, I just picked Seattle to win, and maybe my power rankings will be different next week. But right now, Philadelphia, number four at 9-3, and number five, it was difficult. I was thinking Seattle, but overall, I went Indianapolis at 8-4, the only 8-4 team on this list. Andrew Luck is the best young quarterback in the game. Top three, maybe 4-5 quarterback now in this game. I mean, you got to go Brady. You got to go Manning. Drew Brees is having an off year. And there's obviously Aaron Rodgers. So I would say top four in the game. Andrew Luck, unbelievable. with Ahmad Bradshaw, what, breaking his ankle or a foot injury, keeping him out for the season, it's tough. And like I said earlier, you have Heron, you have Trent Richardson in the lineup. The running game is pretty weak right now for the Colts, but their air attack is lethal with T.Y. Hilton. Reggie Wayne's still around, and you always have that guy under center in Andrew Luck. I believe in the Colts. I believe they're going to win that division. I think they're going to run away with that division. They already have. They already are. And I think you're going to see them make a huge splash in the postseason. But if you get down to it, the bottom five is kind of where everybody likes to hear, because you like to hear about the losers. Everybody knows who's the best team in football. Everybody knows, you know, the elite teams. But where do I rank the bottom teams? Let's start with 32, and we'll work our way up. Give people a little bit of credit here. 32 should be obvious. It's the 1-11 Oakland Raiders. They beat the Chiefs at home, big win. Then they come out and get trampled by the St. Louis Rams. What was that, 52-0 or something ridiculous? What a layup, what an egg to lay. I believe it was maybe even 2 weeks after they got their win. I think they lost last week, too. But just a pathetic team. They are, again, on track for the number one overall pick. And again, they're probably going to waste it. I'm looking at you, Jamarcus Russell. Number 31, the Tennessee Titans, coming in at 2-10. Mettenberger is just, he's got a good arm, and you see shades, but they have no run game. Their wide receivers are now hurt and pretty ineffective, and their defense is just pathetic. Leading me into the number 30 team, the New York Jets, also at 2-10. I kind of had this flip-flop with the next team, the 29th team. Where do I go? I decided to put the Jets at number 30 because they are just simply inept on the offensive side of the football. They can't find a quarterback. They can't find a running back. And name me a wide receiver besides Eric Decker. They have a good defense. Don't get me wrong. It's serviceable. It'll get you through in the NFL, but That offense is so pathetic. That earns them the number 30 spot. At 29, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, simply because now they are still relying on Doug Martin. Have you not gotten the memo that Doug Martin stinks? They fed him the rock on Sunday a lot, and they got beat. Charles Sims, almost a non-factor. Bobby Rainey, a complete non-factor. The only thing this team has going for it, frankly, is Mike Evans, and that kid is ridiculous. Out of the rookie class, I understand Odell Beckham Jr. and the hype and the catch. Mike Evans is probably the rookie of the year. Probably the most impact player out of this rookie class. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins rookie of the year, because the Giants aren't that much better. They just blew a 21-0 lead to Jacksonville. I have to give Mike Evans the nod for the best rookie wide receiver this season, which leads me into number 28, Jacksonville, the Jaguars. 2-10, but they were down 21-0. They'd probably be lower on this list, more along the 30 to 31 range, like they've been almost every week. But man, down 21-0 at home, coming back, beating the Giants. Unbelievable drive. Blake Bortles still stinks, right? He still does. He always will, kind of. I don't know if that kid's going to develop into a franchise quarterback. I think Jacksonville might have swung and missed on that one. But give it to him. Hand it to him. And for this week, I mean, they're 28. That's where I see it. Time to get a sip of water here. Let's do this before we get into a little hockey. We're going to get into some hockey now. Before we get into like the news and the rumors and all the stuff, there's a couple goalies making some tryouts, getting signed. A couple surprises so far in the NHL season. Let's get into the passing of Jean Béliveau. 10 Stanley Cups, the captain of 10 seasons with the Montreal Canadiens. He was a staple in the league. He's been in the league forever. He's been battling health problems for a long time. He passed away earlier this week. He is one of the faces of the franchise in Montreal. And when you can be a face of the Canadiens, probably the most historic team in all of hockey, I mean, I would say definitely the most historic team in all of hockey, you know you've made a mark. So, Jean Béliveau, rest in peace. Getting back to positive news, Martin Brodeur, my least favorite goalie of all time, but arguably the best goalie of all time. A longtime New Jersey Devil has, after a tryout, signed a one-year $700,000 contract with the St. Louis Blues. Brian Elliott, their starting goaltender, I put that in air quotes. He has been splitting time with Jake Allen a little bit more lately. Suffered a knee injury earlier in the week, so they bring in Brodeur on a tryout. They almost immediately sign him for the rest of the year. We'll see how Martin Brodeur handles it. This is going to be the first time in his entire career he's not playing a game in a Devil's jersey, which is pretty remarkable if you think about it. It harkens back to guys like Joe Sakic, who played their entire careers with one team, and I love that. I wish it wasn't the Devils, and he gave me so much torment for so many years as a diehard Flyers fan that I am. But Martin Brodeur going out west, going to try and make one more run at a cup. I believe I heard him saying, like, when New Jersey made that crazy run a couple years ago to the Stanley Cup Finals, he finally got to enjoy it, and he sat back and said, this is, you know, this is something that means a lot to me. When he was younger and they won a few cups, he kind of took it for granted, which I respect. And he's coming back into the game. Again, if you think about goaltending, he's probably the best goaltender of all time. Made a huge impact on the game. So it's nice to see him back in the game at 40-plus years of age. Kind of like Jaromír Jágr, who his former teammate, actually, last season, but who unfortunately just got injured last night, which would be Tuesday, to a pretty high hit. We'll see what the diagnosis and prognosis of Jágr is. Honestly, he may be a Devil. He may have been a former Penguin, former Ranger, but he's a former Flyer, and he's just an all-around great player. So, and you never wish injury on somebody. So quick health to him. Hopefully he's okay. If it's come out that maybe he has a concussion or will miss some time by the time you're hearing this, apologize. It's Wednesday evening when I'm recording. So Martin Brodeur back in the league. I think that's good for the NHL. I think that's good for Marty. It's great for the Blues organization. They have had the goaltending during the regular season the past couple of years with Yaroslav Halak, who I'll get to in a second, and Brian Elliott splitting time. You never kind of knew who the number one was, though, and it's kind of the same this year. You went in with Elliott as the number one guy. Jake Allen actually is outperforming him in almost every single way. You give him the job, but he's so young that can you trust him in the playoffs? And that's where the Blues have faltered the past few years. The San Jose Sharks have been their kryptonite the past couple of years. Now you bring in a guy like Brodeur who's won cups, who's been there, who's battle-tested. Not only will he get them to the playoffs, this is their hope that he brings them the ring. I mean, St. Louis is an organization that's fun to watch. Love them or hate them, this is a team that is extremely talented, top to bottom on the roster, very deep, very defensively sound. Now you shore up the goaltending spot while Elliott has the injury. You let Marty go ahead and say, all right, here's what, 10 starts, 15 starts, see what you can do with them. Elliott comes back. We'll see how serious the knee injury is. What do you do with Jake Allen when Elliott comes back? Do you send him to the AHL to be the starter? Or do you let him sit on the bench? That's a huge decision they have to make in St. Louis. I'm glad I don't have to make the decision. But it'll play itself out. It always does. So let's let that happen. Martin Brodeur, 1 year, $700,000 to be back with the Blues. And they're playing the Capitals, I believe, in like an hour from now as I am recording this again on Wednesday evening. I'm going to watch that game. I'm very excited. Maybe he starts it. I haven't checked the news, to be honest with you. I'm very excited to see him start a game not in a Devil's uniform. And I can kind of maybe even root for him a little bit. Again, past is the past. What he did off the ice is none of my business. What he did on the ice is all I care about, and tormenting me again as the Devil's goaltender for almost my entire life. I'm 26. Almost my entire life, this guy's been in the opposite net. It's good to see him back in the league. Somebody who I'm not necessarily looking forward to seeing back in the league is Ilya Bryzgalov. He is trying out right now with the Anaheim Ducks, and they're saying pretty much that a signing is likely. John Gibson got hurt with a hip injury. He's out for a while. Jason LaBarbera also injured. So right now they have Frederick Anderson and nothing. You bring in Briz, who is with the Oilers, with the Wild, obviously with the Flyers. He played and won a cup with the Ducks. I believe it was, 2007 when Pronger was there. They won a cup, and Briz was a part of that. Whether J.S. Jágr was a starter or not, Briz had a huge hand in that as he played while Jágr was hurt. This guy is familiar with the organization. He may not be familiar with the coach, Bruce Boudreau, but he's familiar with the Ducks organization. He's been there. He's won there. So it's important that he gets himself together. Whether he's afraid of the bears in the woods or whatever is wrong with Briz, hopefully he's gotten that behind him. He was a free agent for a reason, in my opinion. At this point, I don't think he's an NHL caliber goaltender, and I'm taking out what he did or did not do in Philadelphia. I'm trying to be completely unbiased. I'm not an Ilya Bryzgalov fan. I hope he has success because, again, you don't want to ever wish anybody not to have success, but as a Flyers fan, it's hard to root for this guy. Another guy it's hard to root for is Yaroslav Halak because, again, he's the goaltender right now for the New York Islanders. He's playing out of his mind. Out of his mind. He's won, as of this recording, 10 straight games for the Islanders, a team that's off to the best record in franchise history, a team that just shut out my Flyers last week. And he obviously was in net for that. This guy is on a career run. 10 in a row, and who knows what it's going to be by the time this podcast airs. It could be 11, could be 12. Heck, he could have lost a game, but the Islanders playing insanely good hockey. He's behind that. Yaroslav Halak, and if you don't know me personally, which I'm assuming you do not, I like to play hockey off to the side. I'm in a men's roller hockey league. I'm the goalie there, so I kind of have a bias when it comes to the goaltending position. And Yaroslav Halak, again, fun to watch. Off to a really slow and shaky start with on Long Island with the Islanders. But he found his footing, and he found it quick. The Islanders are playing great hockey in front of him. He's backstopping them. They're doing everything they can to win, and they are winning. So Yaroslav Halak, big ups to him. Unbelievable. That's kind of a surprise to me, Yaroslav Halak playing so well. He's been kind of shaky. He was solid with the Blues, but again, kind of shaky. I think he was he got traded to Washington last year, played in with the Capitals down the stretch. So again, his success is a little surprise to me. Other surprises to me in hockey right now, we'll do three in the East, three in the West. In the Eastern Conference, and this is all standings related, I'll get it out of the way, Philadelphia being 15th in the East. I never saw them being a cup contender, but I thought they would be the 7th seed, at worst, 8th seed, but probably the 7th, 8th seed in the East. It's early. I get it. They're awful. They're awful right now. When Steve Mason plays well, they don't score for him. When he's struggling, well, then they get blown out. They can't find a way to win. They have one win in their last 33,000 games, I think it is now. They can't win a hockey game. They lost the other night to the San Jose Sharks with 11 seconds left because Braden Coburn fell into Mason. You could say it might have been interference on San Jose, but that just shows the luck they're having this season. Empty net. Nieto puts it right in the back. What are you going to do? The Flyers, 15th in the Eastern Conference. Florida Panthers, 8th in the Eastern Conference. If they started today, if the NHL playoffs started today, the Florida Panthers would be back. They were in it a couple years ago. They got swept in the first round. Or no, they didn't get swept, did they? They didn't get swept. I think they lost to New Jersey. Might have been New Jersey or the Rangers beat Florida a couple years ago. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But Florida back in the playoffs if they started today. Can it sustain? Roberto Luongo was playing excellent in net for Florida. They have no offense. This is a team that can't score. They're relying on their defense. They're relying on their goaltending. It's been great so far. They average like 7,000 people a night. It is a mess down there in Florida with the situation at the fan base. But they're playing good hockey. Technically, they're above the Rangers right now in the standings, a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. Will that sustain? Probably not. Florida will probably not make the playoffs, and they'll probably get a lottery pick again. But that's how you build. They're young. They're going to be good one day, maybe, hopefully. I don't think they're that good right now, though. If you look again at the at some standings, this is actually, again, in the West. It was actually 2 in the East, 4 in the West for surprises for me this week. I apologize. I'm sorry. No, it's not. Columbus, the Blue Jackets, the Eastern Conference, the Metropolitan Division Blue Jackets, 16th in the East. Right below, actually, I believe they're tied at this point with Philadelphia in points. They can't stay healthy. I think everybody on their roster has been on the IR except for 5 people. I think they've only had a complete lineup like once or twice this whole season. It's been a mess. Their starting goaltender, Sergei Bobrovsky, former Flyer, came back from injury. He's been inconsistent all year. You have to think a lot of that's due to the injuries. You have to think a lot of that's due to this lack of chemistry. They can't keep lines healthy. They just lost Artem Anisimov for a couple months for a tear in his, I think, a muscle tear. Nathan Horton may never play hockey again. They can't stay out. The Jack Johnson situation off the ice is gotta be. It's gotta be affecting him and the club. They can't find a way to win a game either, and they're slipping fast. This is a team that made the playoffs last year, for what, only the second time in existence on the back of Sergei Bobrovsky. It's again not a team that's gonna light the lamp a ton, but a team that can play when healthy. They can't stay healthy, therefore. They're not going to make the playoffs, much like I fear like the Flyers are. The Flyers are probably never going to catch their footing. All three of these teams may be surprises so far in the season. None of them are probably going to make the playoffs. I would love to, though, in the West, see this surprise. The Calgary Flames, 5th in the Western Conference right now. I really hope that holds up. This is a young, fun team. Johnny Gaudreau is so much fun to watch. Sean Monahan, another player that's just really fun to watch. They're finding gems like Yuri Hudler, who has been a consistent player throughout his career, but is now playing unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yuri Hudler's out of his mind. They're getting great goaltending from Ramo and Hiller. Their defense is unbelievable, led by Mark Giordano, who I think still leads the team in points. Top 5 or 10 in defensemen in points. I think he still leads Calgary. He's been a dream come true for Calgary. He already was their staple. If you had a question who was the best player in Calgary, it was already Giordano before the season started. And this is only shoring that up. This is only making that, you know, more concrete. This is a team that can win. Can they do it consistently? They're pretty young, so they're going to have a tough road ahead of them. I see no reason why this team can't make the playoffs and sneak in there. With the way they're playing, Calgary deserves it too. That fan base deserves it. They've stunk for a while now, and you know, losing Ginla, losing Kiprusoff to well, retirement really, but Ginla going to Boston, going to Colorado, going to Pittsburgh, I think he went to. I think he got traded from Calgary to Pittsburgh. Yeah, and then went to Boston, and then went to Colorado. Now, a team that's also struggling, by the way. Calgary has the makings to make the playoffs. Will they keep it together? You gotta hope they do. Kind of like Columbus did last year. They were playing above their heads. Calgary is honestly playing above their heads. They can do it. They can make the playoffs. They just have to keep the consistency up. It's still early in the season. We have until March. We have until April even, maybe. This is a team that has to continue to get the goaltending, continue to get the consistency up and down the lineup, and the defense has to play well. And I know that's the formula, the secret formula for all 30 teams in the NHL. But they're doing it right now, and they're getting the results, much like the Winnipeg Jets. Eighth in the West, a team that has not made the playoffs since becoming the Winnipeg Jets again. They are getting outstanding goaltending from Michael Hutchinson, of all people, 24-year-old backup goaltender. Pavic's playing well again. They moved Bufflin to forward from defense. Their defense has been better. Not great, but better. They struggle to score at times. And the West is honestly sick. It's unbelievable. I mean, San Jose is tied with Winnipeg for eighth. If you put San Jose in the East, take away the points, they're a top three team. The West is so stacked. So if teams like Calgary, teams like Winnipeg can hang around, that does nothing but good things for the NHL, does nothing but good things for expansion. It's like, think about it this way, and I'll get into this in a second, but the NBA is completely superstar-driven. The same teams make it almost every single year. There's been more repeat champions and a smaller pool of champions in the NBA over the last 25 years than any other sport. It's so hard to repeat in sports in a championship, unless you're obviously in the NBA. So to have these teams like Winnipeg, like Calgary, changing it up and then making runs is fun to watch. I don't care who you root for. It's fun to watch. To get into kind of like teams that kind of stink, Edmonton. The Edmonton Oilers, the Flyers, the Sharks even struggling. These are teams that need to make a change. You had Vinny LeCavalier for the Flyers be a healthy scratch on Tuesday night against the Sharks for the first time in his career, a healthy scratch. This guy has had a very long, very successful career. A healthy scratch, though? If you're Craig Berube, the coach of the Flyers, if you didn't know, you have guys that like RJ Umberger, who I'm pretty sure. Here, let's play a quick game. People that are better at hockey than RJ Umberger. I'm pretty sure JJ Watt is a better hockey player than RJ Umberger. I'm pretty sure every single player in the NHL is better than RJ Umberger. So why does he consistently find ice time for the Flyers? I will never know. He is awful. Ron Hextall has to, regardless of cap situation, has to be regretting the trade, sending Hartnell to Columbus for RJ Umberger straight up. You got two less years of contract term, and you got a little bit of salary cap relief. It's not worth it for a guy as of this recording who hasn't scored a point in like 18 games. It's unbelievable. It's sad and sick and pathetic. You got to have him be a healthy scratch. Not Belmar, not LeCavalier. Try to get them righted. You're stuck with LeCavalier unless... I mean, yeah, there's trade rumors going around that he could be moved. He has a full no-movement clause. This is a guy who will determine when and where he goes. At this point, you take anything for him. It's a bad signing from the beginning. 5 years for a 34-year-old player. Not smart. You have guys like Braden Schenn, Braden Coburn, who are attracting interest from the Edmonton Oilers. From Edmonton's side, they got to shake it up. They're terrible this year yet again. Their coach is on the hot seat, but he shouldn't be. Apparently, GM Craig McTavish says that Dallas Eakins is not necessarily to blame. You have guys like Jordan Eberle, Justin Schultz, Nail Yakupov, David Perron, who are all rumored to be tradable in the rumor mill, on the block, if you will. Maybe not so much Eberle, but he's probably the guy you can fetch the most for. You have a team like San Jose who needs wingers. You have a team like Philadelphia who needs wingers. Pittsburgh needs a winger with the Pascal Dupuy injury. Possibly the Devils need a winger if Jágr is hurt. There are plenty of moves to be made. You have that holiday freeze coming up. I think it's on the 19th or so of December. Teams are not allowed to make moves. This is a Christmas season that can be very holly jolly. We'll just say that. We could find a lot of moves that could be done. There is potential out there for a very busy deadline, a very busy holiday season if you're an NHL fan, an NHL general manager. And I'm very excited because, just like everybody else, We all love trade rumors, and you know you do. Let's move on to the hardwood here, the NBA. We got the NBA, and then the MLB will wrap up the show. In the NBA, Steph Curry takes the Golden State Warriors to their 10th straight win, a one-point win over the Orlando Magic. Again, we're not trying to talk about like scores from specific games because it's going to be old news by the time you listen to it, but the fact of the matter is the Golden State Warriors are for real. They are for real. You have to watch out for them in that Western Conference. The NBA is a superstar-driven league. Steph Curry is a superstar, much like Kevin Durant, who's a superstar. He's finally back for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They lose in his debut to the Pelicans. I believe it was 112-104. Oklahoma City has the Sixers coming up, so you know that's a win. But Kevin Durant, they needed him back. This is a team that you saw what they did without him. They won, what, four games without him? You need Kevin Durant back. He instantly makes your team better. He instantly makes any team better. You tell me that the NBA is a team-driven league. You tell me that. Yeah, the San Antonio Spurs are the, I guess, the exception to the rule. But Oklahoma City is nothing without Kevin Durant. Take LeBron away from Cleveland. They're a subpar. No, I'm sorry, not subpar. They're average at best, even with the other two. Even with Irving, even with Love. They're a mediocre team at best. Then you have a bad team like the 76ers who are still winless as of this recording. Again, they're my hometown team, but they are like 0-17 now. I believe they're their worst record in franchise history to start a season. Or no, the NBA record, I think. They already broke their record for the franchise. But the NBA is what, 0-19 to start a season? Here's the thing. The Sixers are winless. Let's try to forecast their first win. It could come against Minnesota. I think ESPN did a Wednesday afternoon, did a stat where they did a percentage for the Sixers' next five games to see when they will finally win a game. Minnesota was their greatest percentage at 31%. I don't see it that way. I think they lose to Minnesota. I think their best chance to win a game is at Detroit on December 6th. Saturday, December 6th, it's this Saturday. At Detroit, Detroit is 28th in offense. The Sixers, not much better. They are they're by far the worst offensive team in basketball. Very quickly on a side topic, the pizza chain, Papa John's, in Philadelphia, and I'm sure it's around other markets. I've seen it for like the Columbus Blue Jackets, but it's bigger here in Philly. All four teams have a deal with Papa John's where, well, I'm sorry, not the Eagles. The Eagles have one with Dunkin' Donuts, but the Flyers, Sixers, and Phillies all have deals. Like if the Phillies win a game and score more than five runs, if the Flyers win a game and score more than three goals, you get Papa John's 50% off the next day. The Sixers, they're so bad, so inept, they don't have to win a game. They have to score more than 90 points, win or lose, and you get half off Papa John's the next day. That is how pathetic the Sixers are. The Flyers actually did the same thing last year where they were so bad. They started off, it was like 4-15. They definitely started off 1-7. They took away the three goals and just said for the rest of the season, as long as they win, you get half off. It's unbelievable. This is not like a plug for Papa John's at all, but the Sixers now don't even have to win. They just have to score 90 points, and you get half off your pizza the next day. Detroit, 10th in team defense, 28th in points per game. There's your chance if you're the Sixers to try and steal a game on the road, get your first win of the season. I have a friend at work, and I try to tell this story to as many people as possible because it's ridiculous. I love the kid to death. I hope you're listening. But I said to him, hey, listen, I'll give you so-and-so, such-and-such amount of jelly beans if the Sixers win 16 or more games. I don't think they're going to win 16 games. He said, no. This was before the season started, by the way. He said, no, I'll give you 35 games. I'll take the over on 35 Sixers wins this season. He couldn't even finish the sentence, and I said, all right, let's do it. Shook her hand. He gave me 35 wins. The Sixers started off 0-8. I get an instant message at work saying, should I pay you now? I said, no. We will wait until it's mathematically impossible for the Sixers to win 35 games, since that's the right thing to do, and then I'll collect, because that is absurd. So for all you guys that took the over-under on the Sixers' win total this year, you could have put it at 12, and this team's not even going to break it. They are pathetic. Let's finish the show up tonight, though. We're already about 40 minutes into the debut episode here of Bar Talk Sports Podcast. Again, go to facebook.com/Bar Talk Sports Podcast or just type in Bar Talk Sports Podcast into the Facebook search bar. Follow us on Twitter at BT Sports Podcast. Go to bartalksports.net. Let's talk a little bit about that, actually, before we get into the MLB. BarTalkSports.net is a domain that I bought here a couple weeks ago, right when we were getting the show started, and I reached out and I said, I'm looking for writers, and I still am. If you're interested in writing for basketball, the NBA, I need an NBA writer for the website, reach out to me, please, on Twitter, on Facebook. You can do so to the email address, too, bartalksportscast@gmail.com, if you're interested in writing for the NBA. Not too much, not too crazy. It's a blog style. It doesn't have to be professional. 400 to 1,000 words once a week. Nothing crazy. I have a really great baseball writer in Ryan Waldus. I have a really great hockey writer in James Harding, a college friend of mine. I have a really great NFL writer in Mike Berry, another college friend of mine. So Mike, James, and Ryan are my writers now, as well as myself. I'll be filling in some writing as well, but I'm mostly going to be doing the audio for the show and running the social media pages. But if you're interested in writing for the NBA for BarTalkSports.net, please inquire, and we'll see what we can do here, work something out. Again, just go to BarTalkSports.net for everything. We're going to have it blog style, updated almost every single day. All the links will be posted onto Facebook, onto Twitter. We'll have a really good time with it. It'll be a lot of fun for you to interact with the show, read the comments, Let's do this. You and I will have a conversation every week. We'll get into it. We'll all read questions. We'll do all that good stuff. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll end the show tonight with the MLB. A couple signings to talk about. There was a minor trade. Michael Saunders got swapped for J.A. Happ of the Blue Jays. He's going to Seattle for Saunders, the outfielder. But a couple signings I wanted to touch on very quickly is Torii Hunter signs a one-year deal for $10.5 million to go back to Minnesota to where he became a superstar with the Twins. That's a good signing because the guy's going to finish his career where he began it, finish his career where he made a name for himself. And I'm really excited to see Torii Hunter play one more year. You kind of knew it was in flux a little bit with Detroit. They didn't bring him back ultimately. He's still a slightly above average offensive player. He's almost 40. He might even be 40. So we'll see if he still has that bat speed. But he's still a very good defender in his own right. He's great for that team. He's going to be that veteran leader who's going to go in there for that one year. They are not going to win the division. They are not going to win a wild card. They're not a playoff team. They're very far away. But it's nice to see the guy end his career where he started it. The other bigger signing, arguably, is the MLB current home run champion, Nelson Cruz. He had a lot of ups and downs with the performance-enhancing drugs, and then he signs a one-year deal for, $8 million to go to Baltimore, leads the MLB in home runs, sets himself up for a big payday, and cashes in. He's going to the Mariners for 4 years and $58 million. Nelson Cruz basically, like I said, went to the bank. Can he hit 40 again? 40 is like a monster number in today's game, which is sickening. I get it. It's the dead ball era. I get it. It's the post-steroids era, if you will. Pitching is unbelievable in baseball right now, so it is obviously contributing to home runs being down. You have pitchers that are making $200 million plus. You also have hitters making $325 million, but that's another story for another day. Nelson Cruz cashes into a team that, quite frankly, is overpaying to try and win. They overpaid Robinson Cano last year. 4 years to commit to a guy like Cruz is tough. He's battled injuries in the past, but really any player can battle injuries. He's always been a power guy. He put it together last season for a Baltimore team that a lot of people thought could win the World Series. They didn't. He didn't. He goes in the free agent market. He cashes in. Good for him. If you're going to throw $58 million at me for doing this podcast, I'll do it. But I do it for free because I like it. And I like you guys. I'm excited. Then you have the unsigned guys, the James Shields, the Lesters, the Scherzers. When are they going to sign? The winter meetings are next week. You have to assume that at some point these guys are going to go there. Maybe one of them signs during that time. But when those guys sign, especially John Lester, that kind of opens up the trade market. And I'm going to end it with a little Phillies because, again, from Philadelphia, because he's probably the best pitcher on the trade market now is Cole Hamels. You have teams like Boston, like the Cubs, like the Dodgers who are interested. The Phillies are apparently scouting the Dodgers prospects very heavily right now. They did so last month with the Red Sox prospects. We already know a lot about the Cubs farm system and how good they are. Any of those three teams can be a perfect match. As a Phillies fan, I say do the move because there's no way Cole Hamels wins another World Series while he's here in Philadelphia. He's really all they have. This is a team that's not going to be good for a long time. We're going to be paying him to just be the ace of a team that's going nowhere. for his sake, as a Phillies fan, I want to see him succeed. That's why I say trade him. Not because I don't like him, because I want to see him win. Just like Cliff Lee, just like Roy Halladay before his injury and ultimate retirement, I want to see these guys get as many rings as possible. So trade him to a team like Chicago, who's on the rise. Trade him to the Dodgers, who are just stockpiling talent. Trade him to a team like Boston, who was terrible last year, but is doing everything they can to get better. They sign Hanley. They sign Pablo. Maybe they even get a Scherzer or a Shields. Maybe they bring back Lester. But this will open up the market for Cole Hamels. He's the best arm. If he was a free agent, he might even be the best arm as a free agent. But he's the best arm in the trade market. You got to think he's going to go this offseason. Ruben Amaro can't just do nothing again. And there's a hashtag going around, fire Ruben. But this can't be going on forever. He can't pitch here next year. He doesn't deserve to. He deserves to win. So when the big three sign, that'll impact where Hamels goes or the trade market. Very excited to see where these guys go, the Lesters, the Scherzers, the Shields, especially James Shields. He's my favorite pitcher in baseball. Him and Chad Billingsley are still my favorite. I'm weird. But regardless, I'm very excited to see where the big three land. You're going to probably see them kind of trickling through in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so. Usually they sign by the end of December. These are guys who want to establish where they're going. They can get trained, they can get started, and try to win another World Series. And Cole Hamels, I hope for his sake, he's not with the Phillies next season. They need to restock. They need to get younger. They need to get the hot prospects. So hopefully, again, for Hamels' sake, he is no longer with the team come opening day. And that's coming from a diehard Phillies fan. So at that note, thank you guys so much for listening to the debut episode of Bar Talk Sports Podcast. Again, we'll find you every week, or you find us every week, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Podomatic, on SoundCloud, all the podcast services. We do appreciate all the support you're going to and are giving us now. It's unbelievable how much people are willing to support the show. So it's very important to us that we keep this going every week. I'm very excited to see what we can do here. Again, go follow those guys over at the War Room. I wouldn't be here without them. If you want to go ahead and follow the show here, it's BT Sports Podcast on Twitter, facebook.com/BarTalkSportsPodcast, and BarTalkSports.net. With that being said, I'll be back next week for another episode of Bar Talk Sports Podcast. Thank you very much, and have a great week.